And when you have those properties, actually, it affects generations. It affects generations because when you have property, you can use that property to then send your kids to school and help them have a leg up.
Welcome to Passive Income Unlocked, where we unlock the doors to intelligent, hands-off real estate investing. We talk to experts in the space about what they do, how they do it, and most importantly, why they do it. My passion is careful, intelligent investing and closing the investing gap one investor at a time. While money doesn't buy happiness, passive income does have the potential to buy back your time. What would you choose to do with your time if you had enough passive income to live your best life? How would you like to spend your days? What kind of impact would you like to make? I'm here to tell you, dream big. There's no ceiling. It's all possible if you take consistent action towards your goals. It's been said that success is 80% mindset and 20% strategy. So we discuss both. Ready to gain knowledge and take action? Let's dive in. Hey, everyone, and welcome back to the show. Today, I can't tell you how freaking excited I am to introduce our absolutely amazing powerhouse of a guest today, Monique Holm. Monique, thank you so much for being here.
Thanks for having me. It's my pleasure.
Yeah, I can't tell you guys how just absolutely thrilled I am to have Monique on the show. She's someone that I've been following for a very long time and absolutely love what she's doing in our space. So everyone, Monique is the founder of the Real Estate Investor Goddesses, and I can't wait to have her tell your story. So why don't you start us off, Monique, by sharing a bit about your background and why and how you got into real estate.
Sure. So I never planned to get into real estate. I'm a first generation American. My parents always told me, Monique, you can be whatever you want, but in parentheses, as long as you're a doctor, lawyer, professor, engineer, because that was what success was.
I hear you.
Did you get that same message?
Oh yeah, definitely. Where are your parents from? Or where did you?
Haiti. They're from Haiti.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah. So that was like, okay. And I was a dutiful daughter and pretty good student. So I went to college, went to Ivy League law school, found myself in a big law firm, partnership track, six-figure income, living the dream in theory. Right. I'd followed the path exactly, but I was really, really miserable as a lawyer. Just to give you an idea, one Tuesday morning, I found myself in the emergency room because I'd been having excruciating abdominal pain. And when the doctor told me that my appendix had ruptured and I'd have to spend several days in the hospital, I ended up spending 9 days in the hospital. And then he said I'd have at least 30 days at home afterwards to recover. My first thought when he told me that was, oh, thank God I don't have to go to work for at least 8 days. My fellow told me, like, you won a lottery, like, away from your own personal health. My next thought after this incredible relief was, wow, that's bad.
I
didn't know
myself. I can totally relate. Oh my God. So wait, do you think that the whatever is happening, was that stress related? Was it caused by it?
Absolutely.
Okay.
100%. They don't know what causes it. I know for sure it was stress from my job.
Yeah.
My job was literally killing me. I knew that.
What kind of law were you practicing? I mean, I know it doesn't really matter.
I was a corporate litigator.
Okay.
Long hours, just, mind numbing.
And how long had you been a lawyer at this point?
So that was maybe 2.5-3 years in.
Yeah.
And, I knew I needed a change. It took me a while. I ended up practicing for 10 years. So I did leave that job soon thereafter. Then I went to another firm and another. I was trying to find where I might be happy in law. And there was nowhere, yeah. from what I could tell. But what did happen, what I did get about real estate, the only thing I'd ever been taught was that at some point you buy a house. Mm-hmm. You work hard, you get that job, and then you buy a house. And so I went to do that after a few years of practice. And I live in LA, which is a very expensive market. So this was back in 2005. But even back in 2005, a starter home in a semi-decent neighborhood, and not a mansion in Bel Air or Beverly Hills, but a semi-decent house just in an area where you were not likely to have a drive-by shooting thing. Like, that was upwards of $500,000, $600,000.
Yeah.
And that was hard for me to do by myself. So I ended up buying a, well, a friend of mine said, why don't we buy a duplex together? Like, he would live on one side, I'd live on the other side. I could afford half a house. So I was like, yeah, let's do it.
Wait, so even with your corporate income, it was hard to buy a house in LA?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah. So I think at that point, maybe I was making like $140,000, but to buy like a $600,000, that was a lot.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. You want to be conservative with your money.
Yeah.
Even though you might've been approved for that, it might not have been the best choice.
No, it was too much for me. And even just like coming up with a down payment and all the stuff. So I ended up, yeah, buying a duplex, but we, instead of a property with two equal sides, there was one side, there was a much larger unit and then a smaller two bedroom. And there was even a garage conversion in the back with the one bedroom we could rent out. And we ended up each taking a bedroom in the larger unit, renting out the, like our
awesome.
Upstairs, running out the back house. We even rent out our basement. And I started house hacking before I knew that was the thing.
Yes. The ultimate way to get started on this path.
It was.
I mean, I still really believe that and have also house hacked on, you know, on turbocharge. So
I was a complete accidental landlord. Was not ever in the plan, never thought anything about that. It was just trying to buy the house, which is what I'm taught to do.
Yeah.
And then when I met my husband, he had a duplex, also a house hack. And then we got another house together. And then 2008 happened. Actually, right before that, I was pregnant. And I was still working as a lawyer. My boss called me into his office when I was about 5 or 6 months pregnant. I had just told him I was pregnant. I just started showing. I just told him I was pregnant the week before. Yeah. And he called me in. I actually was expecting a big bonus because I'm working so hard. Instead, I got fired, which was not
expected.
But it was actually one of the best gifts I've ever gotten. Did not feel like a gift. It was a gift wrapped in sandpaper, but it was a gift because I thought, okay, I'm not going to find a job.
Really quick. So I've been fired as well. And it was also a gift wrapped in sandpaper, but yeah. What was for you? Was it like, did he claim performance? Was he worried that you were going to have a kid? Do you have any idea?
Well, he claimed performance. There was a lawsuit we settled. But anyway, I thought it was like, I told you a week ago I'm pregnant. And then until then I was doing really great. And anyway, whatever. It doesn't matter. I'm so grateful. So
got it.
Whatever the reason, it was for the best because I was not meant to keep doing that.
Yeah.
But I probably would have, especially with an extra mouth to feed. And I was the main breadwinner in our family at that point. And I thought, yeah, so I probably would have stuck around just miserable for the rest of my life. So he did me a solid, didn't feel like it at the time, but he did. And so I wasn't going to look for a job while I was pregnant because I didn't think I'd get hired. I thought, okay, I'll wait until after I give birth, take a short maternity period. Then I will look for another job. And then my daughter was born in late August of 2008. Less than a month later, markets were in free fall, like based on non-existent job market.
Yeah.
Not a good time to look for a job. And so I really couldn't find another job as a lawyer. And that was also a gift. And then we had some real estate though. And we ended up selling one of the duplexes, which had a lot of equity. And we started using that to flip houses. So we started to flip houses. And then until about 2015, and then I was like, you know, flipping is it's not passive income. It's an active job.
Yeah.
And when you're done, you have to find another property and that was getting really competitive.
And the taxes.
I started when houses were on sale. They were not so on sale anymore. And I thought, okay, let's find something that we can buy and hold. I want more passive income. And then at that point, I was looking around LA. We're looking for a fourplex or something. Most things starting at $2 million and had zero cash flow. I was like, we're spending tons of money, no cash flow.
Yeah.
And this is crazy. So I was really super frustrated. And at that point, a mutual friend, I was in this mastermind, and my friend from the mastermind said his friend was coming to LA that next day. Like, my friend Robert Helms, he's the host of Real Estate Guys Radio podcast. has done hundreds of millions of dollars worth of real estate. He's coming to LA tomorrow night. Why don't you come out to dinner? And he could probably share some things that might help you. I was like, awesome. So I went out to dinner with them. This was October of 2015. And a 10-minute conversation with him changed my life. Because I was telling him what I was doing, like the flipping and how that was frustrating, trying to find this fourplex. And he said, first thing he goes, you know, LA is a tough market. I always say, live where you want to live, invest where the numbers make sense. Mm. And I went, oh, until you said that, I always assumed you had to invest where you could drive to your property, touch it, self-manage it. It hadn't occurred to me until that moment that there was another option. Like,
yeah,
really? Like, so that really opened up the whole world to me.
Yeah.
And then he said, and you can buy that fourplex by yourself, but you're limited to your own capital and credit. He said, alternatively, you can bring a group of investors together and you can get a 100 or 200 unit apartment building. And he started telling me about the benefits of that. My brain exploded. I was like, what? That's a thing? I thought you had to be a billionaire to do that. I had no idea that normal people could do that. But I had this full body, yes, I want to do that. Yes, yes, yes. I want to do that. And I want to be around people who think that 100 or 200 units is normal. Because until that moment, everyone I was around thought a fourplex was a big deal. Like, I need to be around people who are thinking that big. So that's what I did. And I went home, told my husband, oh my gosh, this thing called syndication, we bring groups of investors together. We're going to learn that. And we bought tickets that night for a syndication seminar that was happening in January of 2016. And we went, a lot of it was over our heads, but we're still like, yes, I want to do that.
I love it.
Yeah. I didn't understand. I was like, what? The cap rate, NOI, PSCR, like it was all this stuff. I was like,
yes,
right over my head, but still I was like, I'm in. It's like, I want.
You knew. And so it was the next big step, right?
Yeah. So we signed up for, you know, this big mastermind and we just went all in. And in that year, so we started 2016 with two doors. We ended 2016 with 1,012.
Wow. That's amazing. I mean, how did you get that kind of traction in just 1 year?
So we did 5 deals. 2 were passive, 3 were active. You know, we started with one of the people in our mastermind was doing a mobile home park, and he'd had a investor who was going to be bringing in $400,000 from Korea, and that investor couldn't bring in the money. And he said, hey, I know you guys want to syndicate and raise money. Do you want to take this chunk and raise money for it? And we said, sure. Yeah, let's do it. So that was our first project. And then we found a couple of apartment buildings in Albuquerque, New Mexico that we got under contract. Well, one was a 77 unit and one was a 51 unit. It's like mostly a townhome community. And we bought those and syndicated those. And then we passively invested in a 318 unit, 514 unit in Dallas and Atlanta.
Yeah, that's taking some massive action and really making things happen. So I know that there's so much lessons that you have learned along the way. And I mean, you're obviously, we haven't even touched on what you're doing right now. But let's just kind of shift, not totally shift, but just talk about. So I know that you have this concept of financial orchards that you talk about. Can you go into that with us?
Yeah. So one of the things that I love about real estate is that once you invest in real estate, there'll be appreciation over time, but you could also force appreciation so that you have more equity. And then there's a beautiful thing of a cash out refinance. So, you know, it's not a taxable event, but you take you've invested and then you're able to refi. So pull out some of that equity, pull out that money that you have in that property and plant it into another property. So it's almost a way of recycling money, but you have this cash flowing property that you can pull out fruits from seeds and plant again. And the goal is to keep doing that. So pulling out money, planting more seeds, pulling out money, planting more seeds until you have an orchard. And I think that's what we want to aim for. So we have that financial stability, just you can always eat because you have so much fruit. But we're most of us are just taught to get a job, have active income, and not have passive income. That's just why it's so awesome what you're doing, teaching about helping inform and enlighten people about passive income.
This show is sponsored by Lux Capital Investment Group. Lux Capital provides pre-vetted, highly favorable investment opportunities on a risk-adjusted basis. Our opportunities are diversified across asset classes, geographies, and operators. We are nothing short of rigorous in our approach to evaluating investments. We focus on downside protection, conservative underwriting, recession-resistant asset classes, and forging strong relationships with operating partners and investors. If you want to be an intelligent, hands-off investor and gain access to the types of deals that I like to invest in personally, make sure to go to lux-cap.com, L-U-X-E-cap.com, and sign up for our newsletter.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, no, I really like that concept or that metaphor of the orchard, right? Like, so basically, can you just dive into, for just for our listeners who haven't really familiarize themselves with the cash out refi, like how does the cash out refi, how is that like harvesting the seeds? Can you just dive into that for a sec?
Sure. So let's say you bought a property. I'm going to try to use some round numbers. Let's say you bought a property for $100,000 and you put down, you were able to put down 10% to acquire that property. So you put $10,000 to buy this $100,000 property. And then you put in another $20,000 to fix it up. And now it's worth, which that $20,000 has made it worth $160,000 or in some case $200,000. So now you can do a cash out refinance. So if they'll, if you were leaving maybe 20% of equity in it, but pulling 80% out in terms of the value. So that depends on the, so you have, I'm kind of lost in the math, but if you have what's 80%? 160,000. Yeah. So you'd be.
So we put 120,000 into it. 100 purchase price, 20,000.
Yeah.
And then increase the value to what was it?
To, let's say it's even 160,000.
Okay. 160 times 0.8 would be 128,000.
Yeah. So you're able to pull out what you put into it.
Yeah. Like, so you put in 30,000 basically.
Yeah.
So that's like a whole hundred thousand that you're pulling out of that property, which is amazing.
Amazing. Then you can rinse and repeat.
Yeah, I love it. So thanks for going over that. I think it's just a really important thing to go over repeatedly for people who are newer to investing in multifamily. So I know that you work with women, and obviously that's something that I'm passionate about too, is closing the investing gap when it comes to women investing. So why do you think women should consider real estate as a path towards building wealth?
That's a great question. So one of the big things is, so already as women, we are often financially disadvantaged. So in the active space, right? We tend to get paid less for the same work. I think now women get on average 82 cents for the dollar. We're also a lot more likely to lose years of peak career growth, taking care of kids or aging family members. So that means we lose seniority and earning power. So we're more likely to be fired first when things happen. There's a recent jobs report, and they're out of the new jobs that came in, only 11% went to women with the latest jobs report. So
really?
89%.
That's messed up.
Of the new jobs had gone to men. Can you believe that? I heard that. I was like, oh my goodness, I couldn't believe it. So it's already tougher for women because of the income issues, the lack of seniority. We're less likely to be hired often. And so we're already at a disadvantage. But and then you have this wealth gap too. So wealth is what you own minus what you owe. So for every dollar of net worth that a man has, a single man has, a single woman only has 32 cents.
Yeah.
So the wealth gap is even more. And when you factor in race, actually, it's like dreadful. So for every dollar of net worth that a white man has, a white woman only has 50 cents, but a Guess how much a Black or Latina woman has compared.
I know it's 10 cents or 11 cents or something like that.
I wish less than one penny.
Was it 2 cents? Oh my
God. Less than one penny.
Oh my God. Oh my God. I forgot about, yeah, I guess it's been a while since I read that article.
That's less than one penny.
That's terrible.
So it's atrocious. And real estate, I believe, is the best way to kind of erase that, those gaps. So, you know, when you have the fair market rent, is the landlord, you're going to get that fair market rent, whether or not you're male or female, you get these passive income streams and you have this equity, which will help with the, you know, bridging that wealth gap. And when you have those properties, actually, it affects generations. It affects generations because when you have property, you can use that property to then send your kids to school and help them have a leg up. Because a lot of the reasons why there's such a big wealth gap, even amongst college educated women, is because a lot of times when you factor in race, it goes even more because they start at a negative because they have student loans. I know when I got out of law school, I had a negative net worth of over $100,000. And because I owed so much money, but imagine like now I'm so happy that my kids won't have that.
Yeah.
You know, they've gone to school and they're without, you know, without debt. So
student debt is huge. Yes. This is such an important breakdown of like why real estate is one of the ways to kind of equalize the playing field. Sorry, continue.
Yeah, I believe that 100%. So I'm really dedicated to erasing, especially the wealth gap. Mm-hmm. I don't know what I can do so much about the income gap, but the wealth gap, we can do something about.
Yeah.
And with that, and when you empower women financially, they will take care of their everyone else. So they've done a lot of studies. They've shown that when they, especially, you know, they'll give microloans to men. What happens when they give microloans to men versus to women? Mm-hmm. You know, when they give it to men, men tend to take that extra money and it goes to alcohol, cigarettes, and prostitutes. When they give it to women, that extra money goes to educate their children. It goes to hiring their neighbors and friends. And it goes, you know, it goes, so very soon after they start giving money to women, it completely transforms the community. So empowering women financially is the shortcut for empowering everyone because they're going to bring their kids along, their men along, you know, everybody along with them. Because that's how we're wired.
Yeah, for sure. Such important points. And it's a huge part of what I'm passionate about too, is closing the investing gap. And like you alluded to, the investing gap is probably more powerful. I mean, not probably, it's certainly more powerful than the income gap. Not that we don't need to address the income gap. We do need to address the income gap, but not investing or the income gap so much more so that we have these like staggering numbers that you were saying. I mean, for women of color to earn one penny on the dollar.
It's not the earning, it's net worth. But yeah, but it's their what? It's their net worth as compared to...
Right, to own one penny. So let's just get this straight. So for women of color, they, on average, they own one penny for every dollar that a white man owns, correct?
Less than a penny.
Less than a penny. Yes, which is, I mean, that's just, it's just heartbreaking and staggering. So,
yeah.
And so why do you think real estate is kind of like the path, like a path that women should pursue? I mean, like why is that the solution to this wealth gap?
Because I think one of the nice things about real estate is with leverage. So you can get in with a little bit, gives you own a lot more. So depending, right, you can put 20% down or 10% down, in certain cases, 0% down to acquire real estate that has this value and that has a value that will generally appreciate over time. You can appreciate, there's normal market appreciation as well as you can force appreciation through targeted rehab and make things more valuable. But with the right strategies, people can get into real estate with little to no money down. That increases your net worth exponentially. So I think that that's where, you know, as opposed to say stocks and bonds, if you want $100,000 worth of stocks, you're going to have to put $100,000 into a brokerage account. You can get $100,000 property, like I said, for $20,000, $10,000, sometimes some cases zero. So that I think is how real estate is such a great way of erasing that wealth gap.
Totally. Yes. Wonderful points. And yeah, thanks for explaining all of that. So tell us about the four myths of real estate. I know that's something that you also like to talk about.
I'm always talking about different myths. So whenever I'm teaching, I always start a different topic with like, okay, well, what are the myths about this? What do people believe that about this that is like, Mark Twain has this quote, it ain't what you don't know that'll hurt you. It's what you know for sure that just ain't so. So I think one of the things one of the big myths that people have is that one, you're limited to your own capital and credit. So it's only based off of how much money you have in the bank and what your credit score is that will allow you to invest in real estate. So that's a big myth that limits a lot of people. Because they assume they need tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of dollars to get in the door. And they need like a perfect credit score in order to do it. And that's not true. That's a big myth. Another myth that people have is that it will take a lot of time. You know, you're going to have to find a property, manage it, put in a tent, like you'll get calls at 3 a.m. about a toilet. And as we know, right, there are ways to passively invest in real estate that require little to no time. You can invest with other people who will do the work and you're getting great returns and tax benefits. So that's a myth that keeps a lot of people from getting in the game. Another myth is another one that was busted for me is that you have to invest where you live, which is especially limiting if you live in an expensive market. And there's a myth that the property that you're buying for investment purposes would be like the property you'd buy to live in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So a lot of people think like, oh, they think about showing up like a home buyer mm-hmm. versus an investor.
Yeah.
And oftentimes the property you're investing in is not the property that you would buy to live in. Not that you won't make it a nice place to live if you're investing in residential real estate, but it doesn't mean that what you're looking for as an investment property is rarely the same as what you're looking for in your home, unless you're going to house hack. We were talking about at the beginning,
right?
Otherwise they're very different things. So it's important to understand what you need for a successful investment property and have a team like realtors that understand that as well. So those are some of the myths. There are a bunch more, but those are some of the big ones. Oh, one of the last ones is that you have to invest in real estate means you're necessarily going to be dealing with the tenants, toilets, termites. You're going to be a landlord again with those 3 a.m. in the morning toilet calls. I called about the toilet, which is something that terrified me. But even with the properties that I've actively managed, I've only gotten one kind of late night call about something. It was like 12:30 p.m. and it was not about toilet, but that's been investing in, you know, for 16 years. But
yeah, that's not bad at all.
It's not bad, but mostly, yeah, you can invest. You have third-party property managers that can do it, or you invest passively in syndications, or there are a lot of other, or you're investing in notes, or your private money lending. So there are a lot of different ways you can do it where you don't have to deal with the three T's. So those are just some of the myths.
Yeah, for sure. No, I think those are all really good ones for people who are starting to think about investing. So thank you so much, Monique, for coming on the show. Really appreciate hearing your perspective and your story. I mean, to be able to go from like a high-powered lawyer, what you're doing now, building an amazing commercial real estate firm and all the coaching that you're doing, just really awesome. Will you please share with the listeners how they can learn more about you and anything else you want to share?
Sure. The best place to go is my website, reigoddesses.com. So for REI, for real estate investor, goddesses.com. And there you can connect me, find the blog and the podcast and our investor club and our events and classes, all the things. So that's the best place to go.
Awesome. Well, I hope you all take some time to check out Monique's website, REI Goddesses. And thank you again, Monique, so much for coming on the show. Just such a pleasure to have you. And we'll see you next time.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you so much for listening to Passive Income Unlocked. Before you go on to continue with your amazing day, please take a moment to reflect on what you truly desire in life. Then think about one thing you can do to push the ball forward in that direction. Also, please head over to iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts and leave an honest rating and review of this show. It really would mean so much to me. Passive Income Unlocked is brought to you by Lux Capital. Lux works with investors nationwide to invest in real estate. We are closing the investing gap one investor at a time. Connect online at www.lux-cap.com, LUXE-CAP.com, for tons of free educational content to further your success.